All right, good afternoon, everyone. So I'm gonna call the Faculty Senate meeting to order for Wednesday, March 30th, 2022. Pat, let's go move on to verification of quorum. Pat, do we have a quorum?
We do have a quorum.
All right. So we'll move on to the adoption of the agenda. Can I have someone make a motion and a second to adopt the agenda for today's Faculty Senate meeting? All right. All those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed, say no. Any abstentions? All right. Adoption of the agenda. So we'll move on to the approval of the minutes. So can I have someone make a motion and a second to approve the February 23rd, 2022 minutes from the Faculty Senate? Second comments. All right. Any discussion about the minutes from the last meeting? All right. All those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed, say no. Any abstentions? Abstain. All right. And the Faculty Senate approves the minutes. So, Pat, do we have any public comment?
No public comments today.
All right. So I'm going to move on to Faculty Senate President's announcements. So first announcement I'm going to make today is that just want to let you know that George Slotsky has been our Faculty Senate Vice President for 12 years. It's kind of been a parliamentary procedure, you might say, that every year someone would nominate George. And in this kind and humbling way, he would accept the nomination and we would basically move on as the Faculty Senate members, knowing we have a vice president. But with that said, George is finally going to not accept nominations this year for Faculty Senate President for the 2022-23 year. So I would like to take a moment to thank George Slotsky for his 12 years of service as Faculty Senate President. And we would like to present you with an award, if you can come up here, George, please, as a token of our gratitude for all your service. So how about we give a round of applause for George?
Very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right. So some more fun. So, we have, since I've been in Faculty Senate since 2015, and in that time, Dr. Farrell Bryant has been a common fixture at the head of the table at every meeting I've attended. So that led us to do a little searching, and Pat did and found out that this is Farrell's 25th year as parliamentarian for Faculty for Northern Illinois Faculty Senate. So we, the NIU Faculty Senate, would like to say thank you for all your years of tireless service as parliamentarian, and we would like to present you with a gesture of our gratitude for all your hard work. So how about a round of applause for Farrell? Okay, so now we will move on to the newest of our things for Faculty Senate. So you'll see we have a thing called Provost Announcements. So we have now allotted time for President Ingram to actually come to Faculty Senate, and she's going to be doing it every meeting to present information, new information for faculty, staff, and then you can and ask questions about the information she's going to present. So,
Provost Ingram. Well, thank you. Thanks. And thank you for giving me a few minutes to at your meetings to just make a few announcements, answer any questions you have, and kind of alert you to things that might be going on in the provost office that are of interest to Faculty Senate. And first, the second thing I wanted to say is congratulations to all of the award winners, staff and faculty. You know, it's award season right now, and I go to lots of events, and it's so nice to be back in person and to be giving these awards in person this year. And I just wanted to say congratulations to all of the people that got recognized this year for their service to NIU. And also to thank all of you for the hard work that you've done this year to keep the university running and on track. It's been a challenging year. And it's so nice to be back here at the end of the, at nearly the end of the term, to see everybody face to face and to be able to thank you in person for the work that you do. I just wanted to alert you to a few things that are going on, and then I could answer any questions that you have. The first one is searches for new for executive level positions. We have three searches that are in some process, some part of their process. The Vice President for Student Affairs. We have visitors coming in starting next Sunday. We have, we're expecting to have four candidates in. There is an open forum that will be streamed. I encourage you to listen to the open forum, and we usually record it, although I encourage you to listen to the stream of the comments that the candidates make, and feel free to send your feedback for on the Qualtrics survey. And that starts on April 4th. As you probably know, and some people know more than have been affected by this more than others, Dean Linda Ransdell has taken another position and will be departing on June 30th. We expect to move promptly to fill her shoes with an interim appointment and to begin the search process. And we'll be using an executive search firm pending an informational item in front of the Board of Trustees. And then Sarah Chinaya, the CFO and Vice President for Administration and Finance, is leaving sooner than that on April 20th. And again, we're moving promptly to find an interim to serve in Sarah's shoes while we conduct a search for a permanent replacement. And I will be chairing that search committee. Both of those searches will commence now. The academic search will, the work will take place in the fall when the faculty are back on campus. I wanted to alert you to the Emerging Faculty Leaders Program. A call for applications went out about a week ago. This is a program that Chad runs with Alicia Shatterman, and I would urge you or people you know to apply for that program. It's a year-long program. I think the participants this year found it very, very useful, especially if you're aspiring to some other sort of leadership position on campus. And the deadline for that is April 15th. And then finally, our Board of Trustees professor, Kathleen McFadden, is giving a talk in the library on April 4th at noon. I'd encourage you to attend. The last one was very lively and interesting, and there are treats there. If you want a little extra incentive to come in and listen to Kathleen talk about her research and answer questions from the audience. So those are the things that I have on my list for today, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about other things going on campus or anything else. I will be talking about the Strategic Enrollment Management Plan a little bit later, and I can answer questions then as well. Great. Well, thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Provost Ingram. Okay, we will move on for items for Faculty Senate to consider. So we have some guests here today that are going to present on the anti-racist statement. Joe Flynn and Tamara Boston, if you could please take the front. And Taylor Atkins, Sue, they're here.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for having me here. I know that some of you all may have already seen this presentation, and I know that some not, but may have not. But for the sake of making sure that we have presented the anti-racist statement to the entire campus and community, we wanted to make sure that we also came to see you all in Faculty Senate. The anti-racist statement was really born out of, the anti-racist statement was really born out of the events that happened in 2020, where we saw, of course, the murder of George Floyd, the use of calling the coronavirus, the Wuhan or Chinese virus, just a lot of racial hate that had taken place across the country and around the world. The university, just like we did with the equity statement, we went to the Committee for Academic Equity and Inclusive Excellence and discussed drafting an anti-racist statement. And like the equity statement, we have been going to the shared governance groups as well as student organizations and faculty senates across the colleges to present the statement. And we have been asking for feedback since we drafted the statement last April. But with last semester being an abbreviated semester and the announcement went out a few days before the end of the semester, we thought that it would be best to reissue the announcement and then visit the different groups on campus. And so now we are still taking feedback on Qualtrics. The presentation states, I think it ends on March 16th, but because we were not able to come to your last faculty senate meeting, we are extending that until the second week of April, which I think is April 15th, I think is the deadline. But it is open and you are welcome for feedback. So some of the language that has come out of the Qualtrics data looks like some of the language that we have encountered and when we met with you all face to face or via Zoom or Teams, and that is some great points have come up, and a couple are here on the slide, including making sure that the statement is actionable. We've been asked to identify, when we say anti-racism, identify who we are speaking about, the intersectionality of our students, how do we address that, as well as that the statement needs to be actionable. And just like the equity statement, we use the equity statement. The equity statement actually was drafted in 2019, and then it went before the Board of Trustees. I do believe it was January of 2020. It became embedded in everything we did, and the next thing you know, we had a pandemic. And because of that equity statement, we were actually able to create policies and practices that were equitable for students across campus. We use that equity statement to drive everything that we do. And so with the anti-racist statement, it is not a statement that lands on the front page of niu.edu. It is a statement that will drive all the work that we do.
Hi, everybody. How you doing? I hope you're having a wonderful and lovely rainy day. So the statement says, and I will read verbatim, anti-racism recognizes the experiences and the impact of racial oppression. Anti-racism is defined as values and actions that promote practices, policies, and environments that actively work against all forms of racism. The goal of anti-racism is to create a united and proactive community recognizing all humanity, especially historically marginalized groups. NIU is committed to eliminating racial inequities and marginalizing practices due to assumptions and stereotypes based on an individual's racial identification. And of course, we are seeking your immediate reaction or your thoughtful considerations and concerns. But before we open the floor, I do want to say right up front that one of the critiques, and I definitely don't want to call it a criticism, one of the critiques that we've gotten pretty consistently across the board is taking that last sentence, NIU is committed to eliminating racial inequities and marginalizing practices, et cetera, through racial identification, to the front of the statement so that it's much more declarative about what our position as an institution is and then how we see what that work looks like. So that's the statement. And so now we are open to hear any comments that anyone has to say publicly. How's anyone, Felicia? Oh, I forgot about that part. So, I'm sorry, I completely forgot to tell you about the process. You threw me off by saying, anyway. So the process to all this, how all this came about in the first place, was a really deliberative process. We initially had a subcommittee from the Office of Academic Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. We began by looking at both scholarly definitions of anti-racism and also looking at model examples of anti-racism from within the MAC conference, as well as other notable universities across the country. Then each of us went to design or draft our own statement. And then when we reconvened, we kind of went through those statements and figured out, well, which language works best. So it was truly a collaborative exercise, and no one person's statement was privileged over another person's statement. It's literally fused together. Initially, the statement was almost about a page long.
It was
about a good 250, 300 words. And we realized that that would not really be all that effective. So as you read, you may have additional questions about the statement. But trust me, we have probably thought of those same questions ourselves, but we decided that if there was additional information needed, we could add an appendicized statement to the initial statement to flesh out more ideas in depth if that should be needed. So this is the edited version of where we originally started. And so, of course, once we finish this process and have everyone's opinions and recommendations, then we'll take one final crack at any fine tuning that comes out of that process and then share that. So with all that being said, thank you for that moment of history. And now we would love to hear if anybody has any comments. Yes.
Hi, Emily McKee for Anthropology. First, I'm really glad to see it moving forward and really glad to see that it's going to be actionable and at the center of work. And I wanted to clarify, are you looking for feedback of support for previous comments that you've already gotten in the other state on the other page applying to this statement, or just brand new things?
Either or, it doesn't matter.
All right, so I would just wholeheartedly second or third or fourth the recommendation that the NIU commitment portion of it foreground institutional racism and not make it seem that assumptions and stereotypes are sort of the bulk of racism's problems.
Okay, so make sure that language about institutional and or systemic racism is front and center.
Is in that NIU is committed, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you. Are you keeping track of that?
Okay. Shane Sharp, sociology. The clause, especially historically marginalized groups, that's going to include way more than just racial groups, correct? So is that on purpose or?
I don't know if on purpose is necessarily the way I would frame it, but we definitely wanted to be inclusive. And we did want to ward off that possibility of any particular person on behalf of a group or taking it up on themselves to represent the voice of an entire group come and, you know, bash the statement. So I think trying to be as all encompassing as possible is probably the best way to go.
No more questions.
Also to note, in relation to, I don't even know if I should say this out loud, but I'm going to anyway. We were also in the process of preparing an anti-blackness statement as well. So, you know, this anti-racist statement up front is intended to capture this broad ways in which we think about race. while the anti-blackness statement is specifically about how we're representing or talking about or engaging African-Americans specifically?
Well, what came to mind when I was thinking of it is like LGBT groups.
Yes. Now, thank you for pointing that out. And that was purposeful. I don't want to say anything controversial here, and I hope I'm not, but oftentimes when we talk about race, there's a tendency to turn that into a conversation about intersectionality. And we wanted to keep the focus specifically on anti-racism. And if, you know, the development of an anti-LGBT bias statement is necessary, then that's fine too. And we can do that and we can have those conversations as well. I don't think that, I think we can walk and chew gum at the same time when it comes to DEI initiatives and ideals. So we want to make sure that the community is clearly understanding that this is about how we think about and approach issues related to race at NIU.
Yeah, I think Evgeny Nestor of chemistry. I think the statement is really good and concise. This is very good actually, because any long statements usually are hard to read even, and they water down a lot of things. But I think related to the previous question, does it mean that having anti-racist statement only without adding to it anti whatever other, as you said, LGBT, anti-gender statement or whatever, because there are other historically oppressed groups which suffer from being oppressed and they are not included into this statement. Does it mean that NIU is not going to develop any kind of other statements, or maybe it would be nice to have a complete statement including both anti-racist statement but also including other oppressed groups?
Again, I think I'm of the opinion that it's important for any institution to be clear and upfront in how it's defining a particular phenomenon and practices. But again, I think we're just going to come back to the point that when this initiative began, it was specifically in response to what was happening with race in the United States in 2020 and before, and of course after, because, you know, just because Derek Chauvin went to prison doesn't necessarily mean that racial issues are done, so to speak. So we want to make sure that we are very clear and upfront about how the university feels about, engages, and operationalizes anti-racism specifically. And so this is not, and I'm glad we're having this conversation, because I think that we all ought to be careful within our institutional practice, and I would even argue in our daily lives, of making these initiatives into these identity battles, because they're not. You know, we're speaking about a specific phenomenon. So if another phenomenon arises, we can deal with that one as well too.
I just wondered if you meant to include ethnicity with this, for instance, Mexican-American?
We did have this conversation, right? We thought about it, and as I remember that conversation, the problem is, how do I say this artfully? The problem with including ethnicity in an anti-racist statement is that you can run the risk or the tendency of essentially including Western European ethnic groups. But the problem with Western European ethnic groups is that once they begin to be assimilated in the United States, that Europeanness gets replaced with whiteness. And so we still find ourselves back to this conversation about racism in and of itself, and not necessarily ethnocentrism. So we're trying to be very clear and explicit that this is about this historic problem of how race is manipulated in the United States. And that manipulation specifically is a story about the ways in which a particular racial group that identified itself, i.e. whiteness, has been in conflict with another group that they constructed, i.e. blackness. So I think it's important to be very clear about that and not cloud that conversation in any way. That's where we landed, right?
That's where we landed. And if I may add, when you start to add the one or a few particular ethnic groups, then the statement becomes that pager, one pager. And we wanted to try to keep it as concise as possible.
Hi there, Stephanie Richter from the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning. And I wanted to commend, while I think it might be able to go further to be actionable, I do like the second statement that specifically mentions actions and working against forms of racism. And I think that's what sets us apart from our equity statement as something that is more action oriented.
Yes, thank you, Stephanie, I appreciate that. Because we didn't want to start defining specific action for obvious reasons, because once we start including different examples, for example, the next thing you know, the document is 3 pages long. And more importantly, I think that can have the unintended consequence of making people think that it's supposed to be used in specific ways, as opposed to being a general guide for whatever it is that you're endeavoring to do. Right, so just trying to keep it a little bit more broad while also at the same time being very focused on the concept of race. We good? Sounds good. Well, thank you for all of your time and attention. We do greatly appreciate it. Please feel free to continue to leave your thoughts and reflections. You can go to this website to do that. And we're looking forward to sharing the finished product with the entire campus. So thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Okay, we will move on to B, which is the Strategic Enrollment Management 2.0, and Provost Ingram, the microphone is yours.
So thanks for giving me a few minutes today. I'm going to go without slides. I'm just going to talk at you for a few minutes, but thank you for letting me sir, give you an introduction to the Strategic Enrollment Management Plan 2.0. You can find the full plan on our website. If you go to the website and just search SEM 2.0, you'll find the complete plan and some supporting documents. Next week, Vice President Saul Jensen and I are going to go to University Council, and we're going to go into the plan in some detail there. We have about 15-minute presentation, and I don't want to do that twice in a row because many of you will see that. But today I just want to give you a brief introduction to the plan, how we got here, and highlight one of the goals of the plan that is really pertinent to Faculty Senate. So under the first SEM plan, SEM 1.0, I guess, NIU really focused on enrollment. We stabilized enrollment. In fact, prior to COVID, enrollment was actually turning around and growing a little bit. We had increases in our first year students. We had increases in the performance of our first year students. Their average GPA was higher. And we also had made progress on first year retention rate, so how many students come back in the fall of their sophomore year. And we had reduced some equity gaps, both in the success of our students, but also in their classes. Over the past 5 years, graduation rates at NIU have increased pretty substantially. The four-year graduation rate went up by nearly 9%, and the six-year graduation rate increased by more than 6%. That's pretty amazing progress, really. It's hard to move a graduation rate. And I just wanted to say to everybody in this room, thank you, because to move the graduation rate in that by that large amount really took a lot of work on the part of staff and faculty to make sure students were getting into classes and succeeding and moving through the programs. Under SEM, the first SEM plan, we also developed a lot of programs and strategies designed to make an NIU degree more affordable and more accessible. The Husky Pledge program was started under SEM 1, the Rockford Promise, so a lot of scholarship programs that aim to make this education affordable for the students that come here, especially many first-generation students and students from lower socioeconomic families. So we also pursued initiatives aimed at retention, graduation, and career success. We implemented Navigate. We paired Navigate, which is a technology solution, with high-touch solutions through the work of the faculty and advisors. We also created a Center for Student Assistance for non-academic supportive students and the Husky Academic Support Center in the Founders Library to support academic support. And we increased capacity in academic advising. We created a financial advising function. So our continued commitment to equity, diversity, and inclusion supports the success of all of our learners, and that was an integral part of SEM 1.0. Now, as we all know, and as we all experienced, the pandemic created new and it exacerbated a lot of challenges for our students and barriers for our students, especially those who were first generation or from underserved communities. These challenges had a huge impact on our campus and on our students, their financial status, their mental health, their social engagement, and this was true at universities across the country. We were not alone in seeing these changes in our students. And it caused disruptions in students' ability to stay in school, to finish their classes, and to persist and to graduate. I also know that changes in learning modalities and technology deficiencies, time management problems for our students, made it challenging, especially for our first time students, our freshman students. But I also know that rapid shifts in learning modalities disrupted teaching for you as well. Switches to online modalities were particularly challenging in courses more conducive to in-person learning. And I am just a huge admirer of everybody who in 2 weeks' time, 2 years ago, pivoted their classes to online learning and has adapted to the ever-changing face of COVID over the last 2 years to make sure that you were responding to your students' needs. And I can't say enough about how much I admire all the faculty and staff that did that. Well, in response to COVID, we accelerated our approach to the strategic enrollment management plan, and we created so-called SEM 2.0 to respond to what we saw as challenges due to COVID. It really built on past successes and strengths of the original plan, while also responding to our new realities, increased mental health needs for our students, financial stresses, and so on. The goals of the plan are really threefold, and they look like the goals from the old plan with a few minor differences. There's a focus on brand identity, which sounds really markety to me, but what it really means is telling our story. How do we tell our story to students so that they understand the unique opportunities that we offer to them at NIU, and we attract great students to this university? Enrollment access and affordability. How do we make sure that our students can afford to be here, that they don't leave us with large amounts of debt, and that we provide the access that we know is important to our region? And then the third bullet point, the third goal, is student success, persistence, and graduation. And I really want to draw your attention to that third point. Under this theme, we envision three things. We envision programs that lead to successful transitions into the Husky experience. So how do we start messaging to students from the point at which we admit them to the point they confirm through summer orientation through their first year about what it takes to be a good Husky student, how to transition, what they should expect, what we expect of them, and how we're going to mutually work together to make that transition successful. We want to deliver on our value proposition to students as an institution that emphasizes social mobility, academic success, and leadership development in an environment that celebrates diverse perspectives and lived experiences, ensuring that all students have the support they need to be successful and engaged. And I would add one thing that has been added to this plan that wasn't in the other plan is a recognition of our status as an R2 university. That one of the unique features of being at an R2 is that we actually offer opportunities to our undergraduate students to engage in our research mission. And that is prominent in this plan. And finally, we support, develop, and assess programs that are responsive to the evolving mental and emotional health needs of our students, their wellness and physical needs, and the safety of our students. So I'm not going to go into more detail on the plan. I urge you to go online and take a look at it. There's a lot there, a lot of tactics, but it's a living plan. It's going to develop and evolve as our environment evolves. It's going to take input, leadership, and commitment from every one of us, every person in this room, every person on campus, to bring this plan to fruition. But I personally believe it's a moral imperative that we deliver on this plan, because the success of our students, the success of our region, the success of our university depends on it. So if you're interested in the full presentation with a lot of details, you can listen to the University Council presentation next week. The plan is online, and I'd certainly love to hear your feedback on the plan once you have a chance to look at specific tactics. But I'll stop there for today and see if you have any questions at this stage. Any thoughts? Well, if not, you know where to reach me. So you can email me or email Chad or Omar or any of the people in our office once you have a chance to look at the specific tactics. So thanks for the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, so we will move on to the next page, which is unfinished business. And I think, Ben, it's your turn.
All right, good afternoon. At this time, I'd like to open up the floor for nominations for the position of Faculty Senate President for the upcoming 2022-2023 academic year. Pat's put on the screen the list of Faculty Senate members who are eligible to be nominated. It's also in your agenda packet. If you'd like to nominate someone, please go to a microphone to do that.
Hi, George Slotsky, Economics. I'd like to nominate Ishmael Montana.
Do we have a second for that nomination? Thanks. Do we need by voice or is hand good enough? Oh, thank you.
Second, Devlin Collins.
Thank you. We'll pause for any other nominations. Hearing no more nominations, I now close the nominations. Letters of acceptance, including information on your qualifications and desire to serve, are due by Friday, April 15th, and can be emailed to Pat Erickson. Those letters will be then provided to Faculty Senate members via email by Wednesday, April 20th, and then will be included in the April 27th Faculty Senate agenda packets. And at that meeting on April 27th, we'll hold the election during that meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. All right, we'll move on to new business. So we have this is a first reading for a proposed amendment to the Faculty Senate bylaws, Article 2, Officers of the Faculty Senate, which is on page 9 of your packet. If you look at page 9, this was kind of addressed before that in the officers. So the proposal is intended to require that candidates for Faculty Senate President be tenured. Prior to reimaging shared governance passed in spring 2020, the Faculty Senate President was elected from among the University Council faculty members, all of whom were tenured. And so we are moving to approval of the proposed amendment will restore the requirement of the Faculty Senate President to be tenured. right now it reads that you can actually be as untenured. So as a first reading, I'm opening this up for any discussion.
Okay, hi. I'm going to be standing on my tiptoes for this. Meredith Stange, College of Law. I have one concern, and my concern is that I know that for very often the tenure process requires approval that typically happens in June, and so I would just hate for the body to lose a potentially strong faculty senate candidate who is not yet tenured as of the meeting, but will be tenured 2 months after the initial nomination process.
All right, thank you.
Vicki Collins, College of Education. So when I read that, I was actually really surprised that it initially had untenured and was wondering if that was an oversight. And so I am in support of this. I understand what was just shared, and maybe we could draft some language or something, but we had a time when we allowed untenured faculty for a brief period of time to serve on DPC, and we realized that that was not appropriate. I know college council, you have to be tenured. So to be president of faculty senate, to me, it doesn't make sense that the person serving in that role would be untenured. So that's just my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, any more comments? Well, this is a first reading, so we will once again see this at the next meeting. So moving on, we will start with reports from councils, boards, and standing committees. So is Linda here? I don't think I saw her today. All right. So we don't have anyone from the Faculty Advisory Council to the IBHE. University Advisory Council to the Board of Trustees. Anyone? Same thing? I can report. I attended the Board of Trustees meeting last week. It was a full board meeting. Some of the highlights that were there were, of course, there was presentations, of course, on the SEM by the provost and Saul Jensen, and also a presentation by Dean Piper from the College of Education. Some of the other approvals were sabbaticals were approved for 2022. There was approval of replacing artificial turf fields for the soccer and the baseball fields for the upcoming season. And they spoke about how funding was required for it, but also how a good majority of the funding was also appropriated through the teams, through fundraising and donations. And so they're gonna replace both the soccer fields and baseball fields. There was a conversation, of course, about Sarah Chenaya leaving NIU, and so they approved to appoint a new interim VPAF CFO for now, and also to start the search for the new position for that position. And that was pretty much the highlights I had from the meeting. So with that, we'll move on to. There's no Faculty Rights Responsibilities Committee, so we move back to Ben again with the FSUC Rules, Governance, and Election Committee.
Thanks. It's just a brief report related to the work on cyberbullying. Thank you, Holly, for providing this to me. But the committee is still, or the group is still on track to finish the website and recommendations by May. Shane Sharp conducted a survey of faculty and staff regarding their experiences with cyberbullying, and those results were very similar to what was experienced by the students, which was that most did not experience cyberbullying, and half of those who did knew the person who had bullied them. So thank you.
All right. Thank you. Ishmael, Social Justice Committee.
Okay, thank you, Peter. So what I want to report on today centers mostly on the progress the Faculty Center Social Justice Committee has made over the course of this semester with respect to one of the main goals the committee has set out to accomplish for this academic year. As you will recall, when the then ad hoc Social Justice Committee submitted draft report to this body, at the top of the 8 key recommendations contained in that report was a call for the Faculty Senate to create a standing Social Justice Committee. That is what we're working on today. And there was an acknowledgement that a demanding and transformational work resulting from the charge of that committee, as it is obvious to the members of the dedicated members of this committee, may not be sustainable without the university support. Today, I want to report that after a series of meetings and working with the Office of the Provost, Office of Academic Diversity, Equity and Inclusion, Provost Ingram has committed a provisional support to help this committee work in a form of appointment of 4 faculty fellows and with a support of 4 graduate assistantship. The faculty fellows to be drawn from the 3 committees working group will each be allocated a graduate student over the course of this spring to help move the work forward and ahead. Calls for the GA positions for these support were widely advertised before the spring break with a March 23rd deadline. We received 28 applications from students from a vast spectrum of experiences in DEI issues and from mostly across all the colleges from the university. We almost done with the review and selection process, and we will soon, hopefully by tomorrow, be forwarding the final list to the provost, who is going to administer the actual hiring itself. Discussion to procure the administration support to help with implementation of the committee's other deliverables, including anti-racism training, is ongoing, and we hope to continue that discussion to with the administration. Apart from this, I would also like to report that the 3 working groups are assiduously working on the prioritized recommendations whose implementation they are delegated to oversee. And in this regard, Academic Affairs Working Group, chaired by Ben Creed, for instance, has embarked on a campus-wide outreach and conversation with college councils across the university to present our work plan and solicit their input in order to inform the work to make the Faculty Senate bylaws on tenure and promotion more equitable and in alignment with our broader institutional DEI mission. So far, this working group has had fruitful conversations with the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology, the College of Education, College of Visual and Performing Arts, and the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. And additional meetings are scheduled with the College of Law, College of Business, and the College of Health and Human Sciences. And so we're looking forward to continue that. Conversation with other stakeholders, including the personnel committee of this faculty senate body has not only been, you know, that body has not only been engaged in offering input to the work of the academic affairs, but has also played an instrumental role in working with us when it comes to the outreach with college councils across the university that is currently underway. Diversity, equity, and inclusion working group tasked with the recommendation to work with the administration to increase hiring BIPOC faculty in alignment with faculty and student diversity is also in the midst of conversation and information gathering exercise to better inform their work in this regard. And they have met with Office of the Chief Diversity, the Chief Diversity Officer, the Provost, and other stakeholders as well. Our Institutional Racism Working Group has identified a couple of deliverables, including working on three to five year anti-racism training that they are working to institute, and of course, spending on resources and support availability. This working group is also developing a podcast series in partnership with Beth Wilkins, coordinator of graduate career and professional development. So there are other works this institutional racism committee is working on. And with this, I would say this is all I have for today. And thank you. If there is question, happy to take any questions anyone may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ishmael. All right, we'll move on to SGA.
Good afternoon, everyone. Yeah, so the main update coming from SGA right now is this is now the second and final day of our student government elections on campus, actually. So our physical polls have been open since about 9 a.m. They will be closing at 6 p.m. today all over campus, and our virtual polls will close at midnight. And by the end of the week, we'll have the results for the new student body president on campus. It is a very contested election right now, so it's very hard to say who the next person will be taking this role. But I'm just going to go ahead and open them with, you know, welcome them with open arms. And I'm just going to say this is probably one of the last times I will see you all together functioning as a body. So I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to sit with you all. And, you know, it's been great making the networks and being a part of the conversations this year coming back from COVID. So, you know, it's really meant a lot to see, you know, kind of the determination that all of you have in making the campus work the way we used to before COVID. So again, just thank you all for having me in the discussion this entire year. And I look forward to where we're going to be next year.
Thank you, sir. All right, Operating Staff Council. No report. How about Support Professional Staff Council?
So after several months of working on electing an SPSS personnel advisor, we did elect Joseph Lovelace from Student Legal Assistance. So he is our new personnel advisor. So we're looking forward to having him work with us over the next few years. We're also in the process of finalizing our SPSS awards. We had SPSS election for nominations. So we're in the process of elections, and then we're still looking at the analysis of the SPSS campus survey, and so we anticipate that we'll have the results of that for next month. Thank you.
Thank you. And I noticed Linda creeped in the back, so do you want to go back to the beginning? You have a report from the I saw you. If you want to just go ahead with the IBHE, you can get to be last today. Well, you're always first, so you get to be last.
It was probably Pat, right? She's like, oh, I just saw her sneak, right? It was, wasn't it? I saw her sneak in back there. How's everyone doing? I have to admit, I came last week. I thought Faculty Senate was last week. It's been really busy. It was pouring rain. I walked in. There was some really nice food set up out there. I said, no, this is not Faculty Senate. This can't. I didn't even ask. I just walked out. Okay, so first I wanted to provide you with a brief update on the to the HB 5506, the Dual Credit Act. I don't know if any of you are concerned about this or not, but it's been amended after negotiations between ICCB, IFT, and our group as well. And it addresses some of the concerns that faculty raised, although not as much as we might have preferred, right? But that's how negotiations go, so. But we were heard, and that's good, right? The partnership agreements must include, and it says, the expectations for maintaining the rigor of dual credit courses that are taught at the high school, and including students not deemed ready for college-level coursework according to the standards of the community college. The professional development plans for teachers lacking HLC qualifications to teach transfer courses must be approved by January 1st, 2025. The bill had moved the date to 2026 from 2023, and we pushed them back. So no, let's make that 2025. The plan must be completed within 3 years, and matches the current requirement. And after January 1st, 2023, instructor must have at least a master's degree and 9 graduate hours in the discipline in which they expect to teach. So that drops the currently allowed bachelor's and 18 credit hours degree. So, we didn't win there, right? Okay. And it adds the requirement that within 15 days after entering into or renewing a partnership agreement, the institution, the community college or university, shall notify its faculty of the agreement, including access to copies of the agreement if requested. And this is to ensure faculty at the higher education institution are aware of such agreements. So I don't know if you've had any conversations in your respective programs about dual credit, but this is what's happening, right? Okay, so that's the update to the Dual Credit Act. At our last FAC meeting, actually, I didn't attend the one in March because I was in Puerto Rico, sorry, at a conference. So I was going to, but oh my God, it was like 80 degrees out. I mean, seriously, sit on Zoom all day? I don't know. So but they did provide me with summaries of our work. So I have the working group I'm in is the College Debt and Affordability Working Group, and I have their summary, and I have the Public Caucus summary. And I thought I would just read, not the whole thing. I won't do the whole thing to you, sorry, just portions of it. Okay. So the college affordability, we've been examining various issues involved in both student debt and the overall affordability of a college education for would-be college students. And our initial steps in this direction have been through information and data gathering, like I've been telling you. Okay. But as we began gathering data, our focus changed from a purely national perspective to mostly a state one. And starting with like this idea of free tuition, we quickly identified over 15 states with some claim to offering free tuition. And what we found was that those claims were based on widely varying criteria, definitions, and stipulations, right? Often pinpointing very specific demographic groups, such as senior citizens. So we decided to pare down our states to what we considered were the strongest models for pursuing this, either on a national or state-by-state level. And we identified California, Delaware, Hawaii, Nevada, New York, and Tennessee. So we're going to start focusing on those states. They have specific programs which might serve as potential models for Illinois. For example, the Tennessee Promise. Tennessee has a really nice program, actually. Nevada Promise. The Delaware Seed Scholarship is also another one we need to look at. It's very promising. Eventually, we identified our criteria that was worthy for examination. The definition of free tuition needs to be looked at. Student graduation rates, limited restrictions to a program. How is the program funded? Is it merit or need-based, and is it a last-dollar scholarship, right, with no income limitations? And then other questions we're going to be looking at and unpacking eventually. How MAP grants are funded and distributed, so we're going to look at our state and then compare it to these other states. The notion of expanding the non-for-profit in terms of debt cancellation, right? A look at students in forbearance. We're going to examine teacher loan forgiveness programs. That tend to focus on underrepresented and at-risk districts only, and unusual or creative programs that are used only, they're already used locally, such as Waubonsie, the community colleges has this scholarship for 2 years with a subsequent transfer scholarship to WIU. Nice agreement they have there. And we're going to just take a deeper look at student debt. I know it's a lot, right, for our group. We've still just scratched the surface, right? But as we look ahead, we see the next tasks as a deeper dive into the data collected on the 6 identified states and to collect even more if possible. We found it's rather challenging actually to find some of this data. It's not widely available. And there's more to mine from the state of California, we think, right? Which for many years has been a leader in providing reduced tuition rates. So, and we'll keep you updated as we progress with that group. And then the caucus group, let's see, what did we talk about? We focused on the effects of COVID-19 pandemic on our institutions and how we as faculty conduct our business. In particular, we discussed the teaching conditions under COVID-19 and research, right? The effects of the pandemic on our ability to conduct our academic investigations. It looks like that all the public institutions made some adjustments to tenure timelines to accommodate the various disruptions to one's research, teaching, and service, right? Our service was also affected. Meetings held over Zoom, as we all know from doing them on here, right, seem more limited in productivity. Don't you seem like you're distracted too? You're like, oh, I think I'll go throw in a little laundry, right? I don't know. It was like, yeah. And so many visual clues to individual feelings about topics are simply suppressed. You don't catch that, right? We discussed the effects of the pandemic on enrollment at each institution. Some institutions were hit harder than others. And then shared governance, right? Were administrations using the pandemic as an excuse to exclude faculty involvement in decision-making was one of our questions. And again, we found a variety of opinions and examples provided on this matter. Then with spring semester, we discussed again the any adjustments being made due to the Omicron variant and the level of anxiety among faculty regarding the start of the spring semester, right? When the semester began, a lot of misinformation out there. And let's see, finally, with our nation becoming increasingly politically polarized, we discussed the intersection of academics and politics on campus. We all felt that campuses and classrooms should be safe zones where difficult discussions could be held and with differing opinions being aired without fear of expressing one's opinions. So we did talk quite a bit about that in our group. And finally, we are discussing the weight that student evaluations should or should not have and faculty retention, promotion, tenure, and raises. So that concludes my report. Does anybody have any questions for me? Sorry, I'm gonna be back next year. I have to apologize about that, right? I don't know. We'll miss you next year though, definitely, but I'll be back. I'm finishing up my work in my, I keep saying this though, don't I? In my working groups, right? Well, what happened with the other working group is we had to put that on hiatus because the pandemic hit and the information was outdated. So yeah, now I'm with the student debt group. So, but if anybody is interested in knowing more about this position, please contact me. I'm not gonna do this forever. I trust me. I'm yeah. Once we start traveling again in the fall, I'll probably realize, yeah, I think I'm good. So let me know. Any questions too? Let me know. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I apologize for being late. Sorry.
All right. So information items, last meeting for Faculty Senate will be April 27th. All right. And with that, can I have someone make a motion and a second to adjourn the meeting today? Second Collins. All those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed say no. Any abstentions? All right, meeting is adjourned.